Hello everyone, here at our meditation hall in person, and hello everyone on our meditation, our Zoom hall together. It's quite something to think of that there's 150 people here participating in this retreat. And I'm actually feeling kind of emotionally rich, varied, richly varied sitting here. I'm deeply touched by all of you being here. So many of you I know already, and I feel so much love for you. I see, I scrolled through the tiles here. So much love for so many of you I know that are online, and it's kind of impressive to have this rich circle of relationships that we share, we're all part of. And those of you who are new, some of you online, some of you here, I haven't had any contact with before, very little. And to be reassured that you are stepping into circles and circles of love and care and a kind of seriousness, kind of a wonderful, inspiring kind of, this is serious stuff we're doing here. And that what you're about and what you're engaging in, I don't take it lightly that it's a small, it's like a small kind of frivolous thing you're doing. I see this as a kind of, especially a 3-week retreat. It's a meeting addressing some of the deepest places of our lives. What it means to be alive even. The deepest kind of sufferings we have, the deepest joys we have, the deepest sense of purpose and meaning, deepest sense of, you know, how we belong in this universe or how we are here. And to be able to have it in this field of goodwill that has been building up for these years, and to see your faces and know that we're going to share this and know that you're all doing this for important reasons, important for you. So I hope that I'm able to meet you in your intention, meet you in what you're offering of yourself to this practice. I hope that I can support you in this, and it certainly feels like a great honor to to do this together. So thank you. So I usually have a theme for these retreats, and I do have one kind of for this one, but there is something happening inside of me that isn't that it doesn't want a theme, that would be wrong to say. But something that seems more important than a theme. Something about just being here with you, just being here with the Dharma, being here in the delightful seriousness or the serious delight of this Dharma presence we're doing. And that a big part of what I think supports this practice to evolve and develop is learning the art of learning to rest in some deep, profound way in the object of meditation, or the rest in this life here. So there's some kind of being at ease, being settled, being finding a place of being content, not with the world, not with maybe necessarily your mind. Some of our minds are a little crazy, so it's maybe not the best thing to be content with. But to rest in something deeper than that, to rest in some contentment of just here in the present moment and not striving. The little Dharma slogan is, don't strive, arrive. Don't strive. Instead, arrive. Arrive here. Arrive in this moment. Find something here in this moment, here to arrive in, And know you've, in a certain kind of way, it's not the full story, but a certain kind of way, if you can arrive in this moment, in whatever way you are, and oh, this is what's happening, this is how it is now, honestly here with this, it's kind of, you've arrived, that's it, like there's nothing more in a certain way. And to rest in that, that allows the Dharma, allows something to deepen and move and develop that is quite wonderful. So, in the short period before the Buddha died, maybe in the weeks before he died, he gave this, he knew he was dying, and so this is an important time for a teacher to give maybe the most important teaching, what's most important to leave behind and to remember, and kind of encapsulates it perhaps. And, he was dying, he was leaving behind his disciples, people who had been relying on him, some of them maybe for many years. And and he wasn't going to be around anymore for them to rely on, for him to be the refuge. And so he said, make an island of yourself. Take yourself as your refuge, with no other refuge. That's quite a transmission for someone who was the teacher, and like Buddha, I guess, was pretty extraordinary. To be in the Buddha's presence probably was pretty phenomenal. One of the great teachers in the history of humanity. And he's turning the pointing back to you. Stop looking at me. You're the island. You're the light. Find it their refuge. You're the refuge. And then he went, and no other refuge. Wow, what? And then he goes on to say, make the Dharma your island. Make your Dharma your refuge with no other refuge. With this emphasis, no other refuge, the only way you can reconcile those two statements is it if you and the Dharma the same thing? That's I feel, maybe you have another way of reconciling it, but I don't. You and the Dharma are the same. You find the Dharma here in yourself. It's not something foreign. It's not outside of you. The words I speak kind of don't have much Dharma in them. They're like just pointers or something. But here is the Dharma. Here is the refuge. Here. And then he went on to say, and how do you do this? How do you make yourself a refuge? How do you make the Dharma a refuge? And then he says, you practice the four foundations of mindfulness. Which is the core teaching of the Vipassana movement that we're part of. We practice deeply observing the body in the body in reference to the body. Deeply observing feelings, in feelings, feelings in reference to feelings, not in reference to our preferences. Deeply observing our mind states as mind states, just observing it in reference to themselves, not in reference to our beliefs and our opinions and our societal ideas of what should be and how we're supposed to be. And we deeply observe the mental processes that cause suffering or lead to freedom. So this introspection, this deep kind of observing, this kind of check, here in the present moment, it through our own capacity to be mindful, to be aware, is what creates the refuge. So when I say don't strive, arrive, here's where we're arriving, here in this body, here with these feelings, these mind states, these dhammas, these mental processes, here. And here's where we're learning to rest. Not so we fall asleep, but so that there is mental and bandwidth, so there's mental, there's heart bandwidth, for there's room for something deep to happen here that you cannot engineer. Some deep opening and flowing and wellspring of beauty within that can happen, that can grow for you. So for this retreat, the closest thing we'll have to a theme is the four foundations of mindfulness. And my plan is to go through most of the instructions in the discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness with some detail. In a way, many of you know this and have practiced this before. So I hope that what I have to offer will be new enough or fresh enough or that you'll find that it opens the practice a little bit further and supports the growth of your concentration, supports the growth of your mindfulness, and the growth of your freedom. And I thought maybe we wouldn't start with that tomorrow, for the talk tomorrow, but after that, the talk I think will follow the sequence of them, of these four foundations of mindfulness. There are 13 kind of instructions or exercises in it, and we'll probably do 10 of them. And one of the things I think is really nice about these four foundations of mindfulness is, at least I think it's nice for me, hopefully it's nice for you, is my interpretation that they're laid out following kind of a developmental path. So they kind of describe a journey we go on, a journey of this arriving here in a deeper and deeper way. And we start kind of a little more in the coarse parts of life, and then we go to a little more of the, I don't know what to call it, the refined or the subtler or the more inner, the more the operating system at the heart of it all. And it's a beautiful process of going in deeper and deeper and deeper. And then in terms of our wider life, is that one of the great things that Buddhism has to teach, Buddhist practice, is that if you do this inner work, it turns you eventually inside out and makes you a much better person to care for this world. That if you care for yourself, then you will naturally become a person who is benefiting the world around you. So rather than thinking first about how to benefit the world and then kind of engineering, organizing that yourself that way, a much more reliable way to do it is to first purify, clarify, empty out the greed, hate, and delusion, the confusion that we have here, and discover a place of great clarity, openness, availability, where we're not in danger of meeting the world with hatred or with greed or envy or jealousy or anxiety. And then we're able to step into the world, offering probably the best parts of who we are that I hope is going to help the world a lot. So we have this, 3 weeks of, in a certain kind of way, shutting out the world. You know, we're arriving here just to be here as simple as we can, and no news, no technology, no media. Maybe even no contact with friends and family. To do this very important and deep work, to really find that place of rest, to find that clearing away and the settling where some the Dharma can really start becoming a refuge for us and more. We're here to do that work. And then we return. In Zen, they say, you return with gift-bestowing hands. It's a beautiful expression. So, and then for most of this last year, the theme I thought I was going to wanted to teach about, that I want to do this for years, was not self. But I'm kind of mystified how to do 3 weeks on not self. I'm convinced it can be done, but I'm not sure I'm the one. I haven't figured that one out. And I haven't taken the time. I thought, oh, this really needs to study a lot or think it out. And, but it's still on my mind. So I have this hope that I can sprinkle that in as we go along. And maybe that's a better way to have it come across anyway. So that's, you know, the plan and to do with you. And as I said in the, to some of you here already, not to the people online, is that the expectation is that you're all experienced practitioner. I have a lot of respect for that because my assumption is with people who've done a lot of practice, you've begun to find a way to do the practice that's more tailor-made to, for you. You found, you understand yourself, your own inner ecology, you understand the kind of things, what works for you and what doesn't work. And so you kind of have, even if you're not even conscious you've done it, I think we kind of make adjustments in how we practice on our own. It's kind of like if you learn to swim, or if you're a, you know, champion, athletic swimmer, the body will slow, because of the repetition of the strokes, your body's slowly, slowly finding how to do it most efficiently. And but, you know, you almost can't engineer it, but your body finds its way. And when we do meditation, I think there's a kind of a subconscious way in which we're finding kind of our way. And so I respect that. So I'm not here to offer you something different than what you're doing, I don't think, as long as you're doing insight practice or Theravada meditation practice. And then I'm hoping that what I have to teach can work both as instructions that you can do as the instructions, if you want that kind of thing, or you can do your practice, and what I have to teach will augment that, will kind of strengthen it, will expand it or help develop it for you with perspectives and kind of approaches that maybe you can add on in some kind of way without making it complicated. Certain insights, certain understandings, certain perspectives that might come along. And then when we have, for those of you in person, when we have practice discussion with me, and for those online, have it with Inez, and those who are auditing with yourself, that that you will somehow, you know, find a way to discuss this and explore it, and so that it really enriches you, your practice. And so... And chances are the instructions will kind of follow a little bit in pace with going through the Four Foundations of Mindfulness text. Those exercises probably offer instructions in the morning, next morning, that will follow the teachings that were in the afternoon. That's usually the pattern. So I think that's enough to offer you some idea of what my thinking is, subject to revision, as I meet you, and we're all kind of in it together. So as I meet you and find out what's going on, and Inez will be, we'll have lunch together and hang out together, and so she's going to give me updates of how you guys are doing online, and then I think I'm meeting with them. I might come meeting them a couple of times. Twice? Three times. So with online, we'll have a drop-in practice discussion with me three times during the retreat, so I look forward to meeting you that way. So, Sometimes I have some logistical things to say when we're here in this meditation hall. I think for those of you who are new, if you signed up to be a practice leader, that meaning you're sitting up here to ring the bell at the end of the sitting, you can either sit here in the chair or you can sit in the seat where I'm sitting right here now. And either one. And if you've never rung this bell before, I suggest you come in during a break, after a meal, when no one's here, and practice hitting it. Because so many people think they're going to hit the bell lightly, and, you know, it's like clang, it's like a big thing, which is a little bit hard for meditators. And you kind of can't undo it. But if you do it too softly, that's fine. You can undo that. You can kind of, you know. So if you've never done it, come up and practice it. It just needs a very light touch. And often the way to hold a striker is you don't hold it hard. You don't like grab it. You let it just kind of dangle between two fingers. So it's like really loose. You move flip your hand around. It kind of goes up and down. It's kind of like, you're not holding it in place. It's kind of like, it's very free. And so that freedom, that lightness makes for, if you kind of very light touch, it makes for, can make for a very nice ring. And then for those of you who need to sit in a chair, all the time, or maybe some of the time, there are, the chairs that are in the hall are fine to use, but if you find other chairs in the building that work better for you, you can bring them in here. And in the fire closet, which is just past the water fountain there, we call it the fire closet there, there's more of those black mesh chairs that we have in the dining room. So if those work better for you, you can bring them in here. If those wonderful turquoise chairs with the wheels on the bottom, if they work better, you can bring them up here. It's a little color clash, but it's okay. Or in your chair, anything, you know. So it's just, we want you to feel free to bring it in here and make it work. And it looks to me like there are some empty mats, and maybe that's enough empty mats. And so people who want to in the chair, one maybe sometimes to sit on the mat or on the floor, will find one that's free. It looks like there's plenty of chairs that are empty. So those of you on the floor who want to occasionally sit in a chair will find a chair that you can sit in. And we ask that no one reserve, unless you check in with me, I guess, no one reserves the window seats. It's a kind of exceptional situations. We allow someone to use it as at their place, but that way it's available to different people who need to lay down in a comfortable place. And if you want to meditate outside, outdoors, there is in the yogi need closet black mats, black sabatons. And those go downstairs then in the yogi need closet, right?
I think so.
Yeah, they should be downstairs.
No, that's, I'm going to use that. That's where I'm going to sit.
Oh, you're going to sit there?
Yes.
Oh.
We
ran out of the brown ones. Oh. So anyway, in the yogi need closet, there are black sabatons, and those can be taken outdoors. And really shake them off, clean them off well if you're sitting on the dirt with them. But if you're on the decks, any of the decks or something, you're welcome to take it out there if you want to sit cross-legged so that's probably enough. Any questions that would help some of you feel more at ease here tonight? And yes, Yolanda. Which chairs can you take outside? You shouldn't take the ones with the rollers out in the dirt, but you can take it out in the deck. You know, the what? I think Eddie chairs can go on the deck, but you want to be careful about which ones you take out, maybe if you put them in the dirt. If you take one from the dining room, they should bring it back to the dining room for meals. I think, or unless, I don't know, there's so many. With this kind of weather, probably many of you will eat outside. Will I be leaving?
Yes.
No, no plans to leave.
You'll be with us
tomorrow. The whole, yeah. Okay. I might leave once to go to the store to get breakfast supplies. I'm the breakfast cook. But otherwise, and then I off. Well, sometimes I'll leave and go down to De La Vega Park because I need some exercise and we'll see how much I can do on this retreat, but. And week-long retreats, that's where I find the Dharma talks down there. So you know, it's important for me to go down there. So where else are they going to be found? So I go down there before the Dharma talk and go walk in the redwoods down there. So that's so you see me sometimes coming and going, but that's the extent of it. I used to go home much more often because I had kids growing up at home, but the kids left home.
Seeing the black mats up here reminds me to ask, we're supposed to bring any upholstered sitting items in overnight, right?
Oh, because, I mean, outside?
Yeah.
It's probably a good idea. It can get humid here and get wet. Yeah, so anything that shouldn't get wet should be brought inside. So I feel very remiss to take comments from you and have all these people online who are I can't ask or can't see what's up for you. So you haven't been forgotten. So thank you.
I'll answer the questions tomorrow.
Yeah.
So and can you hear me okay? So we traditionally begin our retreats formally with going for refuge, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and taking the five precepts together. And this is like an important part of forming our community or the safe container for all of us to be able to really settle deeply in our own practice. Now, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are known as the Triple Gem. And, you know, in ancient times, you know, gems were really seen as very, very valuable. Well, maybe they are still today. But they were also seen as being protective. You know, and sometimes you hear that the protection of certain beautiful gems. And so it refers to the protection that a refuge gives us. And a refuge can mean finding some form of shelter and protection. But, you know, it's not the kind of shelter and protection like that a roof over our heads gives us or the food we eat. You know, those are wonderful things we do, but it's really the shelter, the safety that we find in our own hearts. In a world that is in a universe that's constantly changing, it's the only place we can have refuge is in our own hearts. And going for refuge is a choice we make. That's how we say going for refuge is something we do. And it's a choice we make again and again to turn to the, to align our lives with the Dharma. And to have the path be at the center of our lives. The Buddha referred to both external and internal refuges. And the external refuge being the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And the idea can be that the you know, when we think of the Buddha, it's like, that's this person, this human being, it's external refuge. The Dharma is a path, it's something we follow. The Sangha are, you know, all of us. And then there's the internal refuge. And those are the qualities of the heart that we develop when we follow the example of the Buddha. You know, we go to the Buddha for refuge. This is somebody who became fully free of greed, hatred, and delusion. And it's that inspiration. I think that that's the reason we're all here. It's that, oh, that possibility of completely letting go of greed, hatred, and delusion. And that turns the outside, the outer refuge, it brings us into the internal refuge of that particular, those qualities that the Buddha developed himself. He developed compassion in himself in a very deep level. He developed wisdom in a very deep level. And so that's, so we practice those, we have those. We have those right now, but we go deeper and deeper and we connect again and again. You know, a refuge gets richer and fuller. And we go to the Sangha for refuge. And, you know, we, you know, traditionally, of course, it refers to the awakened beings or fully awakened, but it also can refer to the community of practitioners, you know, or companions on the path. And you know, here in both our Zoom Sangha and this Sangha, we're just weaving together this larger Sangha. And we can take refuge in that support, in the way we just support each other with our practice. And the internal Sangha, what is an internal Sangha? It's the qualities that we have with each other, these qualities of friendliness, the quality in our own heart of that friendliness towards ourselves, towards others, of generosity, of kindness. All those beautiful qualities that are there. And as we've started the retreat and started noticing each other and just this very sweet love, you know, and that's the both the outer Sangha and the inner Sangha together. And so we'll chant the refuges and we'll begin. Mine?
But you're welcome to use it.
Or I can be raspy. Whoa. You know, we'll begin in Pali. In the with an expression of homage to the Buddha, and to respect, you know, homage, respect to for the Buddha, not worshiping. It's just a real appreciation of what he's offered us, and it literally means homage to the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the Rightly Awakened One. And we'll do it in call and response. And so you'll repeat after me each part. And those of you online, you know, you have the, if you're not from, some of you, well, you're all familiar with this, but they're in the resource area. And so you can have the words if you want, but please feel free to do it in your own space. I know we can't hear you, but we can feel you. So, Namo Tassa. I'll do just one word at a time. Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. So we will now chant the three refuges in Pali, and we'll do it three times, you know, call and response. And I go to the Buddha for refuge. I go to the Dharma for refuge. I go to the Sangha for refuge. And then we'll say the second time the same thing, and the third time the same thing. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
So an important part of taking refuge is taking refuge in our own goodness, in our dedication to not cause harm. The five precepts are kind of like guidelines that help us align ourselves with the path. They kind of let us know when we're online and when we're starting to drift away, when the unkind thoughts towards ourselves might arise. You know, we're just beginning to drift away from that kindness. And the more aligned we are with not causing harm, the deeper our sense of integrity develops. It fosters a deep sense of trust in ourselves, of confidence in ourselves. When all of everything we do, all our actions, our thoughts are geared towards non-harming, this is what allows the practice to really flourish. It's what gives us the ability to be happy and at ease in our lives. And by agreeing to the five precepts, we help create a safe container for all of us together, practicing together, those of us in this retreat, in this retreat center, those of us practicing in the larger community. They're not rules to follow or something to be perfect at, but they're an inclination of our lives. They're an inclination to not cause harm. One of the things I've learned in my own practice is just how much subtler it gets. You know, as every time that I take I've taken the five precepts on retreat and at other times, the non-harming, the voices, the inner voices, have softened and softened and softened the harshness, any harshness in my own heart. So the five precepts are the first is to refrain from taking life. And I like to include to act with reverence to all forms of life. You know, it connects with my heartfelt wish to treat all living beings with care. And here we get to experience a lot of little living beings. To refrain, number two, is to refrain from taking that which is not given. And to me, I like to think of it from the positive side of it, of appreciating what we get, what we receive, including what we receive in our own minds. You know, it's, you know, here's a sitting that isn't particularly the one we had in mind for this morning or this evening, and appreciating that's what we've received, arriving at where we are, not where we want to be. And the third is to refrain from sexual misconduct. And for this retreat, it means not participating in any sexual activity of any kind. You know, in daily life, of course, refers to treating our sexual energy with care and not cause harm with it. And the fourth is to refrain from lying and to speak truthfully. And for this retreat, it means maintaining noble silence and speaking only as needed. For some of you on Zoom who live with others, it might look a little bit different. And just again remind you that it's more important to be kind than to be silent. And the fifth one is to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind. And for any of you that might be tempted by your devices, both online and here, it might be helpful if you really think about them as intoxicants. Because if you are tempted, you definitely there's an addictive quality is what's at play. So really notice, you know, oh, I'm refraining from intoxicants. So I'll speak the precept and please repeat after me. For the duration of this retreat, I agree to refrain from taking life.
I agree to refrain from taking life.
I agree to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I agree to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I agree to refrain from sexual activity.
I agree to refrain from sexual activity.
I agree to maintain noble silence.
I agree to
And to only speak when necessary. I agree to refrain from intoxicants. So the formal silence begins now. And feel free, you know, for those of you in this time zone to go to bed early. I know some of you have flown in. You know, or you can have a cup of tea or continue with formal practice, either sitting in the hall, walking meditation. You know, find your rhythm tonight. And whenever you go to sleep, you know, I wish you very sweet dreams And we'll see you in the morning, and it'll be 5:30 Pacific. Thank you all.